Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Stop Kittin' Around by Corinne Winters. Narrated by Emily Durante. Prologue. Ruby fled her cozy Connecticut coastal home of Fiddler's Cove when her fiancé left her at the altar. After spending 20 years in the Big Apple, she's moved back home and lives in the lighthouse once owned by her departed aunt and uncle. Navigating midlife and reacclimating to her old hometown would be challenging enough, but Ruby has a secret. She's a sea witch with powerful enemies. Ruby, aided by her trusty but big-mouthed and snarky feline familiar Rumpus, protects Fiddler's Cove from magical threats while solving mysteries with her merman boyfriend, Chief of Police John Miller. Ruby has taken on an apprentice witch, a troubled teen named Allegra. As she adjusts to her new role as a mentor, she faces yet another challenge. Ruby's most recent triumph is helping to put cold-blooded mob hitman Dennis Moreno behind bars. No good deed goes unpunished, however, and it looks like John may have paid the ultimate price. 1. Heat smashed into Ruby's face like a physical wall. She pushed on toward the raging inferno, stubborn and unmindful of her own pain. John was in there somewhere, and she had to save him. "Ruby, stop!" The slender, pink-haired woman grappled at Ruby's arm, striving to hold her back as she pleaded. "You'll be killed!" "John's in there!" Ruby fought to be free from her friend's grasp, even as the heat reddened her skin and coated her with a sheen of sweat. "Let me go, Trixie!" Before them, John's patrol car was barely recognizable as a dark, blurry frame within the blossoming orange and yellow fireball. Thick black smoke billowed into the night sky, marring an ebon scar across the starscape.
"Ruby, put out the fire!"
An orange-striped furball bounded in front of her, ears flattened down against his head, the fire's heat causing him pain.
"Now!"
Hearing her familiar, feeling his presence in her mind, helped Ruby focus. Being a water witch, she was in tune with the liquid world. Ruby felt a water main under her feet, rushing beneath the restaurant parking lot. Ruby summoned her reserve of eldritch energy. She tapped into the water main, causing a 2-foot-wide gout to erupt from the parking lot with violent suddenness. Allegra, Ruby's teenage witch apprentice, shrieked. Allegra covered her curly-haired head with her hands. A chunk of asphalt, blasted into the air by the geyser, came crashing down onto the roof of a nearby car, smashing the windshield to bits.
"Oh my God!"
Allegra said, shivering in shock. Ruby knew her apprentice needed help, but she was in the middle of her magic, lost in the flow of water. Ruby took control of the geyser, pulling the 40-foot-high spout of water into a hook shape. She spread out the water into a wide plain before it struck the roof of the burning car. Smoke spewed forth. Water hissed into steam. Ruby recondensed the steam back into water, not wanting to waste a drop. It seemed to take an agonizingly long time to put out the fire, though Ruby's subconscious mind knew it was only 20 seconds or so. At last, the wreck sat steaming and dripping, a wet, blackened, melted mockery of its former self. Ruby looked inside, fearing what she would find. Maybe John got away. Her hand flew in front of her mouth as she beheld the ghastly sight within. A human body slumped across the seat, its feet toward the passenger side door. Though a little more than a charred husk, the body didn't look like John. It couldn't have been John. Ruby became aware her knees hurt. It took her a moment to comprehend that she'd collapsed in the parking lot. Her hands slapped the pavement as she struggled to hold herself up. Ruby's breath came in ragged gasps. No matter how much air she sucked into her lungs, it didn't seem enough. She felt suffocated, drowning on dry land. Without Ruby to direct it, the water flowed along the path of least resistance. The geyser subsided and left behind a gaping hole in the parking lot as its legacy. Ruby sat in a puddle, gasping, pants soaked, feeling as if her entire world had come to an end.
Ruby,
Trixie said, grabbing her and holding her close. Ruby clung to her friend, feeling as if she should be crying, but for some reason unable to.
He's gone, she said, her voice breaking. He's gone.
What happened?
Rumpus loped around the remains of the wreck.
Was there a fire witch or something?
This wasn't magic, Allegra said.
Ruby was only dimly aware of what was being said around her. It was as if she watched everything happen from outside her body. Nothing felt real, yet she had the awful knowledge that it very much was.
How do you know? Rumpus snapped. You're just an apprentice.
I know enough to cast a detection spell, Allegra said defensively.
Her eyes narrowed to umber slits.
Besides, I'm a Hephaestian witch, remember? Mistress of machines.
Allegra pointed at the flaming wreck.
I'm picking up the remnants of a device in the wreckage.
A device? Trixie still embraced Ruby, but she turned her head toward Allegra.
A bomb.
Allegra's flat, cold tone gave no doubt she believed her theory, and Ruby trusted her apprentice.
Somebody put a car bomb under John's patrol car?
Rumpus gasped.
That's so evil.
Not somebody, Ruby growled, fending off Trixie's arms and leaping to her feet.
She felt a cold, burning rage inside of her.
Benito Lombardi, that son of a... He straight out told me he was going to do it.
Ruby turned toward the restaurant, blood in her eye and murder in her mind. Trixie leaped in her path.
No, Rubes, you can't go in there. This is not going to end well.
Get out of my way, Trixie. Benito's got to pay for this. No, Ruby, Trixie is right.
Rumpus rubbed up against her leg.
Would John want you to go and kill Benito in cold blood? Be judge, jury, and executioner? Or would he want you to work in the system and see justice done?
Ruby glared down at Rumpus, struggling with herself, although she knew the answer.
Screw you, Rumpus.
She turned and stalked off toward where her purse lay in the pavement.
What are we going to do? Allegra pleaded. I'm sure the police are already on their way, Trixie said. But just in case, why don't you call them? I don't do well with the police. Why don't you do it?
Trixie sighed.
All right.
Ruby heard them, knew that Trixie was just trying to give Allegra something else to think about. She wished she could find something else to think about. But every breath she took only reminded her of the charred husk laying in John's car. 2. Ruby sat on the edge of a parking block, its razor-sharp, beveled ledge nowhere near comfortable. She stared listlessly at the scene unfolding in the parking lot before her. The explosion involved Fiddler's Cove Chief of Police John Miller, so the entire police department had come out in full force. Part of the scene warmed Ruby's heart, such an outpouring of support and a fierce determination to get to the bottom of the matter made Ruby feel as if she had been right to let John Miller worm his way into her heart. He was a good man, beloved by all. Was. Now he was a blackened ruin of what he had been, burned into a dried-out mummy. Ruby's eyes welled with tears, but her latest sobbing fit had subsided. Trixie sat beside her, handing over facial tissue when needed, collecting the old ones in a plastic bag. Trixie's pale features changed red to blue and back again in the spinning police lights. She looked on with patient sympathy, which warmed Ruby's heart, or it would have, if she could force herself to feel anything more than emptiness. John, gone. The man who had the build and size of a gym bully, but wouldn't squash a bug if he didn't have to. No. John would have convinced the insect to crawl onto his finger and then let it out the nearest window. Ruby had always admired that about him. John was an outsider, a merman growing up in human culture. He had plenty of impetus to grow up and be a jerk, but he didn't. John would rather laugh instead. Ruby couldn't even find it in her to be angry at the person or persons responsible for setting the bomb. After all, her anger, her rage, even killing those responsible, wouldn't bring John back.
"I don't get it,"
Allegra said, pacing back and forth anxiously behind them.
"Why can't we use magic to bring John back to life?"
"Allie," Trixie snapped.
"Well, it's a legitimate question,"
Allegra sniffed. The tiny black cat on her shoulder nuzzled Allegra's ear.
"That's not the way it works, Allegra," Rufus said.
Like most familiars, he was only understood by magical beings. His meows and body language translated into speech via magical means directly into the listener's mind.
Magic has its limits.
"But I've seen Ruby make a freaking half-mile-wide tornado out of water," Allegra sputtered.
"That's called a waterspout," Rumpus said.
"It doesn't matter what it's called, Rumpus," Trixie sighed. "That was different, Allegra. Ruby was only manipulating what is already there."
"But she used magic to fix my backpack," Allegra sniffled.
"Can't she put a person back together, too?"
"Do you want Plague Lord zombies? Because that's how you get Plague Lord zombies," Rumpus huffed.
"Bringing the dead back to life is magic that no one has yet discovered, Allie," Trixie said. "That's why Ruby's not trying."
Allie let out a grunt of frustration. The teen girl turned around and kicked a soda can across the parking lot. It skittered along the asphalt and slammed into the brick wall surrounding the parking lot and then lay there, gently rocking. A stab of guilt pierced Ruby's heart. Allegra was Ruby's apprentice. If anyone should have been teaching her, comforting her, it was Ruby herself. Yet she couldn't find the gumption to move, to speak, to do anything but stare at the burned-out husk of John's car as forensics teams swarmed all over it. Allegra glanced at the gathered police and emergency personnel.
"I should go tell them there was a bomb."
"No, Allie,"
Rufus said, again rubbing his face on her ear.
"They're mundanes, or at least I think most of them are. They won't be able to understand magic."
Allie let out a deep sigh.
"You know, the hysterical delirium might protect witches and other magical beings from detection, but sometimes it really sucks."
"That's what Fiddler's Cove had going for it." Trixie pursed her lips and looked at the charred remnants of the car.
"Our chief of police was... I mean, John is a magical being."
If Ruby were not seized in the doldrums of despondency, she might have had the urge to grab Trixie by the shoulders and shake her, shouting, "Just because you won't say it out loud doesn't mean he's not dead."
"Without John, who's going to protect Fiddler's Cove from people like Cotton Mather?"
Allegra looked worried.
Hello? What are me and Ruby, chopped liver?"
Rumpus's tail twitched back and forth in annoyance.
"Ruby is the guardian of Farpoint Lighthouse. That means this whole coast is under our protection."
Ruby wanted to laugh, but couldn't make herself undertake the effort. Some protector she'd turned out to be. "Couldn't even protect my own boyfriend."
"We've got to do something," Allegra muttered. "We've got to do something. We can't let them get away with planting a bomb under John's car. We can't."
"Let who get away with it?" Trixie's voice held a note of growing impatience, though she was trying to be reasonable with the teenage witch.
"We don't know who did this."
"Of course we do," Allegra snapped. "It was Benito Lombardi. Ruby said it herself. Dennis Moreno was his guy. We put Moreno in prison, so Benito wants revenge."
"That's just supposition at this point, Allegra,"
Trixie sighed. Allegra turned her glare on the charred ruin of the car.
"If only more of the bomb had survived, I might be able to get it to tell me who made it and planted it."
"You can do that?" Trixie cocked her head to the side.
"Yeah, if I have something to work with. Most of the bomb literally went up in smoke. I know it was there and that it exploded. Unfortunately, that's about it."
Ixnay on the Ajikme talk, guys?"
Rufus said, peering out over the parking lot.
We've got an incoming mundane.
Who is that? Trixie frowned. He looks like he's somebody important.
Or somebody who thinks they're important,
Rumpus said.
Hey, Ruby, do we know this clown from somewhere?
Ruby lifted her chin at last. She knew Rumpus would not relent until he got an answer, and that complying with his request was the fastest way to shut him up. Ruby did not feel like chatting in the least. She saw a blade-thin man in a simple but nicely cut suit striding across the parking lot. He was tall, easily topping 6 feet. His lanky, virile stride belied the gray at his temples and the age spots on his face and forearms. Sleeves rolled up, he doffed a pair of latex gloves and approached. As the man drew closer, Ruby could make out more details. She figured he was around his 50s or thereabouts. A touch of color in his hair showed it had once been red. He wore a shiny gold badge on a lanyard around his neck.
I don't know him from Adam, Ruby muttered before dropping her gaze to the pavement once more. I don't want to talk to anyone. I've already told the police the same story 10 times.
The man drew to a halt a few feet away. His hawkish, light brown gaze snapped from Allegra to Trixie before settling on Ruby.
Hello, Miss Diamond,
he said in a somber, polite tone.
I'm terribly sorry for your loss, but I have a few questions to ask. How does this jerk know your name?
Rumpus growled. The stranger glanced down at the cat and cocked an eyebrow at him.
He read it on the police reports, duh, Allegra said.
Trixie hissed and shook her head. Allegra's face reddened.
I may have read the reports, but I'd like the story straight from the horse's mouth, as it were.
The man winced as if in pain.
I'm sorry, Miss Diamond. I didn't mean to imply your features were in the least way equine. I'm from the South, and we do love our colorful turns of phrase.
Ruby looked at him with something which amounted to disinterested disdain. The man's eyes narrowed, and he offered his hand to her.
Sorry, I should have introduced myself earlier. My name's Special Agent Robert Ulysses Reddy, Federal Bureau of Investigation. John and me go way back.
Ruby stared at his hand, but didn't feel the slightest impetus to shake it.
Ah, Reddy said, withdrawing his hand. Anyway, John spoke very highly of you. He specifically said that if anything ever happened to him, I could trust you to help me get to the bottom of it.
Ruby leaped to her feet.
What's the point? It's not going to bring John back, is it?
Her shout echoed off the nearby brick walls. Reddy swallowed and tried again.
Don't you want to see whoever did this brought to justice?
Ruby turned away, huddling in on herself.
I just want you to leave me alone.
Reddy sighed.
I knew I was going to have to do this. Do what?
Rumpus got his back up.
What are you planning?
Reddy stared down at the cat.
I'm planning on telling your witch that I know exactly what she is, kitty cat.
Ruby gaped.
How can you understand him? Just who are you?
I told you, Robert Ulysses Reddy, FBI, he said, cocking an eyebrow. But you can call me R.U. My nana was a witch. I don't have the gift, but I'm also immune to the hysterical delirium. I know what John was, too. If you'll help me, we can make sure he rests easy. Now, what do you say? We partnering up on this or what?
Ruby turned to him, stared at his hand, and reached out to grasp it firmly. She couldn't afford to give in to the despair. Not now. When John's killers had been brought to justice, then she could let herself fall apart. Until then, the hunt was on.
3.
Wait a minute.
Rumpus flattened his ears back as he looked between Agent Reddy and Ruby.
Are you actually going to trust this guy? His name is R.U. Reddy. I mean, come on. R.U. a jackass is more like it.
Reddy broke into a chuckle despite his somber demeanor in the wake of John's death.
That's one heck of a mouth you got on, you kitty cat. Go ahead, have your fill. Believe me, I've heard all the jokes that go with my name.
Junior high must have been terrible for you, Trixie said.
Reddy turned to Trixie and gave her a lingering look.
Trixie LaRusso, just the person I need.
What? You need me?
Reddy gestured toward the milling throng of onlookers.
See all those looky-loo civilians over there? Chances are at least some of them saw the stunt Ruby pulled when she put out the fire. I want you to go over there and spread the rumor that it was a water main break caused by the explosion that, fortuitously enough, put out the fire.
Why her?
Allegra's wide, mocha-skinned nose wrinkled.
And why do something so silly?
Because the hysterical delirium has its limits, and Mrs. LaRusso here is a pixie. People like pixies. They want to believe them. Actually, you can help, too. If you go on social media and post the same thing, then we'll have that base covered as well.
Ruby took a long, appraising look at Agent Reddy. Go ahead and do what he says.
For real?
Allegra asked.
For real.
Ruby turned to Trixie.
Can you give Allie a lift home afterward? It's awfully late.
Early, actually,
Reddy said, checking his watch.
It'll be dawn soon.
Yeah, I've got her,
Trixie said. She took Ruby's hand firmly in her own.
Call me later once you know something.
I will. Ruby squeezed her hand back and joined Agent Reddy for his trek back across the parking lot.
Where are we going?
She had the gumption to ask. Reddy's appearance had vitalized her somewhat, but it was a constant effort not to give in to the despair and break down again.
The coroner is here. Let's see what she can tell us. Probably not much, given the explosion.
Reddy slowed in his tracks.
You know what?
He dug in his pocket and handed her a set of keys. Ruby stared at them.
What's this about?
I have a blue Lincoln town car parked out on the street. You can wait for me there.
Why?
Because you shouldn't have to see John like this,
Reddy said, his voice growing tight as a drum. Tears welled in the corner of his eyes, but Reddy was too old school to actually let them fall. He took out his handkerchief and pretended to blow his nose while wiping them away.
Allergies. I'll tell you everything Coroner Gates tells me, all right?
Ruby stared at the blackened ruin of John's car and nodded.
All right. Thank you.
She walked toward the street, putting her back to the parking lot. As Ruby approached the convergence of sidewalk and parking lot, she slowed her pace. It didn't seem right somehow. The last time she'd passed this point, John had still been alive. Ruby shuddered as she passed the threshold, Rumpus a step behind. The normally loquacious cat remained silent, which was another reminder of the terrible tragedy behind her. Ruby pressed the button on the center of the keychain and heard an answering chirp. She approached a navy blue Lincoln and used the fob to unlock it. Ruby settled into the passenger seat and tried not to think about the badly burned corpse lying in the front seat of John's cruiser. The minutes stretched on, and Ruby grew impatient. She didn't know how long she could last before another breakdown, and having nothing to do meant that all she could think of was John's body laying still and quiet in death. I wonder if he suffered. Goddess, I hope not. I hope it was quick and painless. Ruby covered her face with her hands and wept anew. Rumpus laid on her lap and purred.
It's all right.
No, it's not,
she said miserably from between her fingers. Everything seemed different now that John was gone. Edges were sharper, the wind colder as it stung her eyes.
Nothing can ever be all right again.
Well, it's about time.
Ruby looked up, indignant at the cat's response, but then realized Rumpus referred to the approach of Special Agent Are You Ready? He strode on stiff legs to the car and settled into the driver's seat. Reddy turned a somber frown on Ruby.
Bev couldn't tell us much because of the extensive fire damage. She doesn't think that, well, that is, John probably didn't feel it when...
Ruby sniffled, and Reddy did as well.
Dang it. Look, I'm on my way to the mortuary. Emergency autopsy. You're welcome to come along.
Will it be M.E. McGuire performing the autopsy?
Ruby asked, her voice thick with crying and grief.
Yes, Reddy said. I called her in specifically.
Good, Ruby said, feeling somehow comforted that John's ex would be the one to perform the autopsy. It should be her. The first pink inklings of dawn showed at the lip of the horizon, casting a crackled, radiant sheen across the waves of the sound. Ruby thought it was entirely too beautiful a scene for a day when a good man died. Reddy parked right in front of the mortuary in the VIP spot. Ruby was surprised because even John didn't park there.
You don't believe in wasting time, do you, Agent Reddy?
Ruby was surprised at the comment, even though it sprang from her own lips. Just by having a conversation with another human being, she was admitting that her life would go on without John in it. Yet it was a threshold she had to cross.
Nope. Come on, I think we beat the ambulance here. There's a pretty good coffee stand down here.
Rhonda's roast?
Ruby's voice sounded rough, tired, and miserable, but talking grew easier with each attempt.
Yeah? Rhonda's still running it?
She retired. Her son mostly runs it, but he kept the name to honor her.
Plus branding, Rumpus interjected. Do you know how hard it is to get a franchise off the ground these days?
They went up to the red-painted trailer, waited in the short line, and got their drinks. Ruby went into her purse on reflex, but Reddy waved her off.
No need. I've got it.
The coffee helped, warming Ruby from the inside. By the time they returned to the mortuary, she saw that the ambulance had arrived and now sat in the parking lot.
They've brought him in already,
Reddy said softly. He led her inside the mortuary, Ruby feeling numb. Several times she had visited the mortuary, and every time before, John had been with her. Now she was at the mortuary because John was there, but in the entirely wrong way. Ruby tightened her hands into fists at the unfairness of it all. They descended to the basement via a short flight of stairs. Normally, Ruby and John took the elevator, out of respect for her 40-something knees, but Reddy was the type of man who was always in a hurry. Ruby spotted Dr. Moira McGuire, the saffron-haired Selkie who served as Fiddler's Cove's chief medical examiner. She was already garbed for her grim task, wearing scrubs and a rubber apron. She spied Ruby's approach, and her face turned into a sad frown.
Ruby.
Moira came forward and embraced Ruby warmly. Ruby stiffened at first, but then allowed herself to relax into the hug.
I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry, too. Ruby sniffled a bit and quickly wiped her face.
My apprentice thinks it was a bomb.
Moira nodded.
Don't worry. I'll take good care of him.
Reddy cleared his throat.
Begging your pardon, Doctor, but have you started yet?
Moira sighed, her eyes growing sad.
I haven't even been able to get myself to unzip the body bag yet.
Reddy frowned.
If you want, we can get someone else.
No,
Moira said flatly.
It has to be me. I have to protect John's secret.
Moira's eyes welled with tears, and she rushed into the exam room. Reddy and Ruby settled down on one of the benches to wait. Ruby covered her face with her hand, feeling exhausted on top of everything else. She'd been up all night.
What are we even doing here?
Rumpus growled.
We should go kick down Benito Lombardi's door and start busting heads until he squawks.
That would be illegal as well as ill-advised,
Reddy said with surprising patience.
We don't even know for certain that Benito is the culprit.
Who else could it be?
Ruby sighed.
Rumpus is rude, but he's not wrong. Benito threatened me not 20 minutes before the explosion.
Reddy cocked an eyebrow.
Is that a fact? What were his exact words? Did he say it in a way we can bust him for it?
Of course not, Ruby said. He danced all around the issue without being overt. But I got the message, sure enough.
What did you say to him?
I told him I was not afraid of him and left. Reddy stroked his chin.
I'm familiar with Lombardi's organization. He's not normally the type to use...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?